The following podcast is a B&E Network exclusive. Welcome to B-Movies and E-Books. I'm Craig Wade.
And I'm Brian Allen Delaney.
And it is episode 45. What? I think our biggest weaknesses are opening an episode and ending an episode. Everything in between is fine.
And also, like, reviews and news.
Oh, yeah, that too.
Those are terrible.
Anyway, yeah, episode 45. Today, we will be reviewing Grin by Stuart Keane. Mm-hmm. And Turbo Kid by, I don't know who yet.
directed and written by Francois Simard. I'm probably saying that incorrectly.
Yeah.
But he's got one of those C's with the tails in it.
Oh, the old tail C's.
You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah. So what I was thinking about the other day is if you count the 0.5 episodes, we have gone past 50 a long time ago.
Yeah, you mentioned that the last podcast.
Did I?
Yeah, the exact.
I'm sorry.
I just
sometimes I forget.
I just want to put that out there just so people don't think like, hey, I've heard this one.
Yeah.
Because every beginning is awkward.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but yeah. Yeah, it's crazy. We've been doing it a while.
Yeah.
I would say I've read more books in this past year and a half than I've ever read in my entire life. No, not like combined, but in a year and a half time span.
I probably agree with that. Especially like, you know, at this stage in our lives.
Yeah. Yeah. Not like outside of school. Definitely.
Yeah. Not whenever you were like in fourth grade and you could hammer out those little, like the little kid books.
Oh my gosh.
You know, for AR points.
Yeah. Do you remember in the, was it fifth or sixth grade? They had to make a rule because of me. I was doing exclusively Curious George. Because they were worth four, AR points.
And how?
So, exactly. And so they were worth four AR points, where like fucking Congo was worth like 15, you know?
Yeah.
And Curious George is like 2 seconds long. So I found like all of them. Flies a kite, goes to the zoo. I don't know if that's a title.
All the hits.
Yeah. And so anyway, one semester, all I did was Curious George titles for credit, and they were like, all right, from here on out, no more Curious George titles for anyone.
But, I used to always just take the tests without reading the books.
Yeah.
Because there was no penalty.
Yeah. Yeah, you could get, like, reduced amount of points, and you couldn't do that book later. I would watch movies and then do it.
Yeah.
Especially, like, Where the Red Fern Grows was pretty damn accurate. So, like...
Anyway. I just like how at, you know, fourth grade, fifth grade, we were still trying to like game the system.
Nice. Yeah. Yeah, we were turds.
So what'd you do this weekend or week?
Well, yesterday I had an absolutely perfect day, but the rest of the week was work. That's it.
All right. What's your perfect day?
I watched so many movies and just sat around being like super lazy, eating like hamburgers and hash browns, basically. But dude, I watched Kung Fury, Turbo Kid, obviously. Sin City,
obviously, because it's the day before. Yeah,
Sin City, and something else. And then I read the book. So like, yeah. I don't know. It was a perfect day.
Cool.
What about you?
You do? I went and saw Pride and Prejudice and Zombies.
Yeah? And? Yeah.
I kind of loved it.
Yeah? Well, yeah. That's what you said on Facebook. The exact same, I kind of loved it.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's my reaction to it, because I don't know if I actually did or not. Okay, because it was strange. Okay. Like, it was what I was expecting, because I had always heard the book was just Pride and Prejudice, but then they just inserted zombie scenes.
Yeah.
You know, which is exactly what happened. It was like word for word, like, you know, Pride and Prejudice stuff, because I've seen the movies and things because of my wife.
Yeah, but now Lena Headey's in it, right?
Who's she?
The lady from Game of Thrones.
Oh, yeah. Cersei.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's in it. And so is Matt Smith from Doctor Who, which I was not expecting at all. And his character was great.
Go ahead. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to.
No, what was your question?
No, do you think that they relied on quote-unquote, like, geek casting as a gimmick?
Probably.
I would think
so.
You know,
because, like, I was thinking about, you know, what the Venn diagram would look like how big of an overlap it would be between Jane Austen fans and zombie movie fans, you know? I think it's actually a pretty big overlap, right? But I don't think, you know, it would have been as successful without certain pandering things.
Well, I remember, like, what was it, 07, 09 maybe? I don't know, when the book came out. And it was a huge, huge unexpected hit.
Yeah, but I think it was mainly because of the novelty of it.
Yeah. And then you had what was the one? Pride and Prejudice was zombies, and then Sense and Sensibility was sea monsters. Yeah. and right around the same time, you had Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter.
Uh-huh.
And so you had all these weird mashups. And honestly, every single one of them I wrote off as a gimmick.
Yeah.
But I watched the film version of Abraham Lincoln Vampire Hunter and loved it. But I only saw it once. It's not really something that I'd ever watch again.
I mean, this was like opening weekend, and there was probably 8 people in the theater.
Oh, really? So,
yeah.
Oh, I wonder if the numbers have come out yet.
I don't know, but it was now granted it was at an Alamo, right? And which I figure would actually be the target demo for that, like,
because
they do a lot of weird movies and stuff. But it was that, and it was like the 10 o'clock showing or something, like at night.
Yeah.
So I don't know, but there was only probably 6 other people in the theater with us.
I don't know how to say it, but I think it's the Shannara Chronicles. Have you seen that or heard of it?
Mm-mm.
Okay, so I went over to Kelsey, my wife's stepdad's house, and he's all into, like, you know, these epic, like, fantasy type stuff. It's pretty cool. It's like a more fantasy version of, like, Game of Thrones or something like that, or like Xena. But made for, like, honestly, I think
I like how that's your frame of reference for fantasy is, well, like, Game of Thrones and Xena.
No. I think that this is like in the middle of both of them, because it's like cheesy, but it's like this epic battle with these established characters. But they also, from what I gathered, I only saw 2 episodes, but they, like, kind of go from city to city, and there's different characters, like, you know, like Xena.
Yeah.
But there is this, like, lineage and all sorts of crazy shit, like Game of Thrones. And it's pretty dark. But it's made for MTV, and it's better than it sounds, but still not anything I'm probably ever going to get into. But he was watching it, and every freaking trailer break, or every commercial break, was a trailer for it. So
Pride and Prejudice?
Yeah. And so I think that they are going after that demo, kind of the young adult, which is why they would probably make it PG-13 versus R.
Yeah, it wasn't bloody or anything like that. Like, most of the zombie kills were completely bloodless, right? I mean, it had some interesting ideas, though. Well, first of all, it was basically 2 movies just shoehorned together, right? And I kind of feel like they were both a little lacking because of it.
Yeah.
You know, cause what makes Pride and Prejudice so good is, like, the actual characters, you know, and their what's the word I'm looking for? just how the characters work together.
No, I know that that's a classic piece of American literature.
Totally.
No, I know it's a classic piece of literature, but have you read it? I haven't.
I haven't read it, no.
Okay.
I've seen several different versions.
I think I saw the one with Keira Knightley. Yeah. Kelsey was watching it. And yeah, I mean, that is the same movie, right? Okay. Yeah, I mean, I could see that.
It's like everything went by like so quickly.
You had to be familiar with the actual story.
You had to have some sort of frame of reference. But it was weird because they also shoehorned martial arts into it. Mm-hmm. Like they made a big deal about it at the beginning, how people trained in Japan or China to learn martial arts to fight zombies. Uh-huh. And then it never really came up. Like there was a scene where they were talking where they were like sparring. But like when they were actually fighting zombies, they were just flailing around with swords. Like, it wasn't, like, any sort of really cool martial arts action or anything like that. It was just, with a sword. It was weird. And then the zombies also talked and were cognizant of everything.
Gross.
It was weird. But
So your overall, you liked it more than you didn't like it?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, it was surprising. Yeah. And it was kind of funny, but mainly because of Matt Smith.
But now I'm assuming this was your wife's pick as far as movies go, right?
Yes.
Okay. That makes more sense, because I couldn't see you like wanting to go and spend theater money on something that was y'all both felt lukewarm about.
I wanted to watch it just to see what it was, but you know, I wasn't like gung ho about going first day or anything.
Yeah. Now, Kelsey wasn't familiar. You know, she didn't know, either she didn't know or she forgot, I don't know, about the books of it. You know, she's not a super genre fiction reader. She reads a lot of like humor and biographies and true crime. And so anyway, but yeah, she didn't know about it. But whenever she saw the trailer, she was like, is that a joke? Like, what's going on? What's going on there? And so I told her about that, and she couldn't believe it whenever I told her about Sense and Sensibility and Sea Monsters.
Yeah.
She was like, no way. Like, yeah.
That one looks better.
But, yeah, I mean, it's interesting, but that does kind of suck if it relies on somebody being familiar with those. Because I don't know about you, but, like, Wuthering Heights and Sense and Sensibilities and Little Women and all that, that kind of just all blends together for me as far as the stories. It's like, oh, this love story, but also this, like, oh, it could never be, you know? And it's just like, I don't know. And I realize that both Wuthering Heights and Sense and Sensibilities have a lot more to it than that. Yeah. But it's just kind of like it all blends together and I can't separate them. Like, I know some of the characters, like Heathcliff is in Wuthering Heights. But it's like, I don't really know which movie's which, which book is which. Well, I guess.
Or how it explained him eating out of garbage cans.
That's a weak joke.
Yeah, that is a reference no one's going to get.
Or how he did that trick when he put the fish in his mouth and pulled only the bone out.
Oh my god.
So which one came first, Heathcliff or Garfield?
Garfield, I think.
Really? Okay.
I don't know.
All right. Let's get somewhat back on track.
So there was two really interesting looking previews though.
Okay.
Number one was Southbound.
Yeah.
Which is done by the guys who did the VHS trilogy. I don't know if you can call it a trilogy, because they're not really
connected. I just saw like a little blurb about it, and I assume that it was some of the directors involved in it. But, okay, so we talked about this a little off mic before. It's an anthology as well, right?
Yeah, but I think they're interconnected.
So are those two directors doing all of them, or is it like they're the quote-unquote, like, you know, I don't know. Were they the producers behind that? What a quote.
Quote unquote
producer. But no, like, were they like the producers behind that? Just pulling it together? Kind of like an editor would do for...
Who did the VHS?
A million different directors.
Okay.
That's why...
Yeah, exactly. It was like a whole bunch. This is Roxanne Benjamin, David Bruckner, Patrick Horvath, and Radio Silence?
Yeah, okay. So these are three... Okay, it sounds like it's three different directors. And then it's
written by like eight people.
Okay. All right, well, that makes sense. Okay, so it's pretty much just VHS with a different frame.
Yeah.
Okay.
It looks more supernatural.
That makes me happy. I'm really, really... Like, I'm all about anthologies.
Yeah.
And it kind of makes sense. I was actually thinking about that over the weekend. Like, why am I so about Twilight Zone and, like, Tales from the Dark Side and stuff, even though there's a huge quality gap between the two?
And but, monsters.
And then you go down to monsters. But, I mean, I wonder why I'm so all about that, and also novellas, you know? But I think that it's because you get pretty much the exact same amount of plot. You may not have the whole world building. You get, like, a full arc of a story.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like shorts, whenever we're talking about legitimate, like, short stories, 5,000 words or less, kind of don't fulfill the same void that novellas do. For me, specifically. I like short stories a lot. But I don't know. I was just trying to figure out which ones I like the most, because I absolutely love novellas, and I love Twilight Zone episodes and all these short anthologies, but I can't figure out what is too short. You know?
It's like the, too short would probably be, you know, the for sale baby shoes lightly used.
Yeah. Yeah. What was it? There was a comedian that was doing cakes. Like, he was just buying cakes from grocery stores and having them, like, personalized with jacked up stuff just to see the people's faces. Sorry, I had something stuck in my throat. I had to take a little bit of a drink break. But anyway, so... He did happy fifth and final birthday. And so anyway, but he did it multiple times, and he tried to explain it that they were just not like, because he was, you know, trying to explain it to the people, like, what the hell's with this? And what he said that he was just saying was like, oh yeah, we're not going to celebrate birthdays after this. But only because he didn't want, you know, people calling the cops or anything. But anyway, I just thought it was funny.
Yep.
I think it was Pete Holmes, but I can't remember exactly who it was.
And then the other one was The Witch.
Oh, the other trailer? Yeah. The Witch.
That looks creepy as hell.
Yeah, I know that it's had a huge, like, festival buzz with it. And it does look very creepy. It almost kind of looks like gothic horror, even though it doesn't seem to have any castles or any of that.
Well, I mean, it's like Puritan.
Yeah.
At first, I thought it was going to be, because I didn't know what it was. At first, I thought it was going to be about Roanoke.
Mm-hmm.
But then it just turned out to be a witch.
Yeah, it's just like a straight up witch living in the woods.
Yep.
Yeah.
But it looks creepy.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'll watch it.
Yeah. Well, the only thing I wanted to add this week, and it's something that I meant to do last, or just mentioned last week, and this might be a little inside, but Ryan C. Thomas's third book in the Roger Huntington trilogy, he's finished with it. And I got it. I'm assuming that he's okay with you. Slots. As beta readers, possibly. So,
nice.
Anyway, I'm very excited about that.
So. Yeah, that's a story like that took an odd turn, and I really want to see where it goes.
It was, yeah. I know that after book two, we were both on board with where that was going. Like, I absolutely love the end of book two. God, that was good. Whereas book one really did, like, it felt like it was, I couldn't see it as part of a larger series. You know, it suffered the Die Hard problem where, like, okay, all this shit's happening to this guy, you know?
It's funny because Die Hard was, like, originally not written as sequels.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And so I was like, it's really all happening to this guy. That's so convenient. And then book two explains it, and yeah. I am so happy. So anyway, yeah. I can't wait to read it. Hopefully he actually does put us as beta readers. And it wasn't just being nice to us.
He's got to now because we said it on air.
Yeah, but I mean, I don't know if he
listens. And everything we ever say on air comes true.
Including what we're going to review next week.
Which is going to be curtains.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. So join us next week when we review curtains.
Were you done?
No, go ahead.
I was going to say, speaking of other things that we hope actually comes true because we say it on air, Toxic City should be back this week.
Nice. So all you Toxic City heads, get prepared for season two.
Yeah.
Which will probably also be very intermittent. So anyway, you want to go ahead and jump into reviews?
Sure.
All right. We'll be back after this short break with our review of Brian. Go ahead.
Stuart Keen's Grin.
Okay. I was just allowing you to pick which one.
Yeah, I know. You put me on the spot.
Back. That was the Menzingers with their song Timetables off their album Chamberlain Waits. That is a awesome album. I urge you, if you have Amazon Prime, you can listen to it for free. Oh my gosh. I know I think the album's from like 2009 or so, maybe 2010. I don't know. But it's an older album, but it is really just totally phenomenal. And I think unless you're really into their music, they're kind of a punk band that goes very, very overlooked. And maybe I'm just out of the loop, which happens a lot. But it's really, really a phenomenal album. So I urge you to check it out. So with that, we're going to jump into Grin by Stuart Keen. Brian, I'm going to put you on the spot. You want to do the synopsis of it?
Well, I mean, like, okay. Because I don't want to give away why it happens, right?
Yeah.
Or should we? Yeah, we're not going to give away why it happens. But essentially, our protagonist, Danny, is attacked and her family is murdered in her house, right? Mm-hmm. Home invasion style.
Yeah, because... No, I'm just kidding.
But why does it happen? And instead of... being killed herself, She convinces the guy to kind of like let her go, I guess, and do a cat and mouse game with her eventually. Right.
Yeah.
And she gives or he gives her a basically the Joker scar.
Yeah.
The Chelsea smile for identification purposes later. So he'll remember what she looks like, quote unquote. And then revenge.
Yeah. Yeah. I will say that this maybe I should just throw out the rating before I get into it. That way it will be a lot easier.
I like how it went from we're not going to put numbers on reviews.
Well, the only reason we did that, we started, was because of the website. Because you can't have a review without anything at the bottom.
We just put zeros on everything.
Yeah. This was not ass applicable. As is everything, including Mad Max. No.
But now it's gone to, okay, numbers as soon as we start.
Well, no, okay. I will say that I really, really, really like this. We'll jump and do the normal thing, review or rating at the end. But I really, really like this story. However, there are a few logical gaps that you got to basically suspend your disbelief for. Mm-hmm. One being why the killer would have done that in the first place. You know, like, yeah, let's play this little game of mouse. Or game of cat and mouse. Game of mouse.
Game of mouse trap.
Yeah. Yeah, and then the rest of it was just an elaborate series of Rube Goldberg devices.
And I was thinking, you know, the rest of it was them describing or him describing them setting up Mousetrap because it takes forever.
Yeah, that game really sucks.
I mean, kind of.
Well, if someone would pre-set it up, it'd be worth it.
You're so lazy.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I am. Okay. So. But no, that, and then later there's one that really was glaring to me. But all those aside, this was a real page turner for me. One, out of necessity, because I started reading it yesterday, but two, I didn't have any problem staying up, you know, especially whenever I start a book late at night. I normally will pick up in the morning before we do the podcast. I had no problem reading this from literally like midnight till 3:30, 4 in the morning, somewhere in there.
You know, I think it works better like that. Because I mean, this isn't necessarily a bad thing, but especially, well, at the beginning and at the end, there are so many new characters introduced.
Yep.
You know, that I think it's easier to keep everything straight if you do a full run through it. Because, like, at the end, when she's getting her revenge, there's a bunch of, let's just call them minions, right? <Yeah. laughs> And then there's, like, one chapter where all these minions start getting names and backstories almost.
Yeah, yeah.
And you're like, what's going on? Well, who are these people?
What I did with that was just like, okay, they don't matter. Just keep reading. I didn't even care. Like, so this is a female one, this is a male one, you know, whatever. But
at the beginning, though, you can't really do that because you don't know who the main characters are actually going to be.
Yeah, yeah. But also, you know, they threw in a lot more at the end than at the beginning. And they would, at the end, it was very just like nuanced character. Like, this person they would talk about for a page versus at the beginning, you got like a slice of life from each of these characters.
Exactly.
Now, what I will say was this had one of the most effective montages in a book I've ever seen. Whenever at the end, whenever the detective is hearing the voicemail and then it would cut to her. Yeah, and then
that was great.
It was so, so awesome. And I was expecting, based on the cover of this book, for this to be a horror book.
Yeah, I was about to ask you about that. Like, I don't consider this to be a horror book.
No, it was reminiscent. I don't know if you remember. It was one of our earliest episodes. Hell, it might even be episode one. Reminded me a lot of Joe R. Lansdale's Bullets and Fire.
That was episode one.
Was mm-hmm. it? Mm-hmm. It really reminded me of that Bullets and Fire.
He's got a TV show coming out.
Really? Good for him.
Yeah.
You know, Rodney from Toxic City is friends with his son. Rodney from Toxic City. Son of a bitch. Rodney from Longbox Small Talk. Only one of my best friends for the last 10 years, and I can't get what show he's on right. No, but he's on, he's real good friends with his son.
Cool.
It's bizarre. But I guess it makes sense because he went to college from the town that they're from.
Yeah. Doesn't he live in, the dude live in like Pasadena now or something?
I think he lives in Nacogdoches.
Okay, Nacogdoches. Yeah, but, close enough. Anyway.
But yeah, it really thematically reminded me a lot of that. Did you think about that as well or no?
I did, actually. Well, I mean, maybe not exact parallels with that, but definitely I thought of it as more of like a crime thriller than a horror book.
Yeah, it had horrific, realistic violence.
Yes.
And that might be what tips it over to fans of extreme horror. However, traditional horror, I mean, I don't really see this as anything. There was nothing in the book that was scary. It was just graphic. And that's fine. It's just not what I thought that I was getting into. But what I came out with, I was very, very happy that I read this book. I liked it a lot. And I'm a lot of it might be that I'm a sucker for the, you know, gritty, like, revenge style stories.
Mm-hmm.
Especially whenever it's not like a rape revenge. For some reason, those always feel dirty to me. You know, I don't like reading about rapes. Call me old fashioned. But anyway, so I really, really liked this. The other thing that I found that I absolutely loved about it was not the main bad guy as far as in the hierarchy of the gang that she was after. But the main one, the one that actually gave her the Glasgow grin, he was like extremely logical and almost like sociopathic because he was totally aware of like the human condition. Like, you know what I'm talking about? Yeah. Whenever he goes to the bar, he goes to a bar and just starts analyzing what's going on. And I loved that. Because
he liked to observe.
Yeah. Yeah. So I love that. Now, here's my problem with it. He liked to observe, right? Mm-hmm. This was the other logic gap. And I'll go ahead and say this. You know, after they've done this horrible, horrible thing after he's done this horrible thing to this family and disfigured this girl, as a man that really likes to observe, he missed 4 months of news coverage indicating that she's alive. You know, he's like, of course she's dead. Like, no, they even said it on the news. They said it 3 times in the story that they said it on the news.
But how would he know it's the same girl with the Chelsea smile?
Exactly.
I'm sure that happens all the time.
Yeah. Well, London is a very seedy place. But anyway, that aside, that's not really a plot hole. It's just a character flaw. Maybe he doesn't like
to watch the news.
Yeah, I guess. But he likes watching people, and people watch the news. So.
And you figure, though, someone in the establishment would watch the news?
Especially to follow up on the crimes they've committed.
Yeah. So,
anyway.
Huh.
But it didn't take me that far out of the story. And I really, really thought that this was a super effective story. Now, what'd you think, Brian?
No, I really liked it. Like I said, like to me, it wasn't a horror book per se. I think there were parts that were suspenseful at the beginning, you know, where it kind of gave me like a thriller vibe where like for some reason, what kept popping into my head was Cape Fear. Right. Because like at the beginning, because like I don't consider that a horror. Well, it's a book, too. Right. But I don't consider it a horror movie. Right.
We're talking exclusively about the remake in the 90s, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, right. We are.
Yeah, because the other one really wasn't scary.
Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, where it has some parts where you're like, oh, crap, what's going to happen? You know, but it's not like it's not going to keep you up at night. You know, unless your biggest fear is home invasions.
No, I was just laughing, thinking about you watching anything else that's slightly scary and just like, oh, what the hell was that?
I'll never go to sleep again.
Yeah.
But I really liked it for what it was, you know. It looks like a horror book from the cover.
Mm-hmm.
but I don't know. But I think it was a really effective, like, crime thriller, you know, a slash revenge story.
Yeah. I could see where he would be a very good extreme horror writer.
Yeah.
Because he was very effective at
the parts that were violent, you know, were like, or the parts that were like gory or whatever, were really effective. Especially some of the descriptions of like the viscera and stuff. Mm-hmm. Right. So I can see where, you know, his horror stuff would be, you know, scary or whatnot. But, to me, it was just a really solid crime thriller.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that.
No. And it's also not like we know or have met the author and he's like, check out my horror book. We weren't misled by anything. It's just the cover made it seem that it was a horror story, you know?
Yeah.
So anyway, but yeah, so this was the first Stuart Keen novel I read, and I was very impressed. You know, like a lot of both Big Five published and, you know, regular or just like self-published or whatever, small press fiction, it did have a couple of editing errors. But honestly, I think that just being like, you know, pointing those out is kind of just an asshole move, unless it detracts from the story. And in this case, it did not.
Yeah, unless it's like really bad, you know, where it's like a bunch of misspelled words in the same paragraph or something like that. Then I usually don't really care about it anymore.
Yeah, honestly, I don't even really look for that many grammatical stuff. The only thing that takes me out, like lie versus lay, will never take me out of the story. I don't even know which one's right. Anyway, but that kind of stuff, that doesn't bother me. It's really just misspellings, apostrophes missing, and just stuff like that that takes me out. Or there versus there versus there.
So, yeah.
Or two and two. Like the small basic grammar shit annoys me. But other stuff, I'm never like, oh yeah. And like I said, and that's not indicative of anything like in this story. There were a few small things, and now I just feel like a dick for pointing them out.
You should.
Yeah. So anyway, but I really, really thought that this was it was a phenomenal. I'm going to say I will give this a 4 easily.
Yeah, that's what I was going to do too. Because I mean, it was well above average to me, and I feel like at the end of it, I don't know if there is a sequel or not, because this just came out in October.
Oh, right? Really? I didn't realize that it was that recent.
I think it was. Let me see.
Now I had been hearing a lot of his name. You know, he's popping up in that upcoming anthology of Matt Shaw's. And I thought that one of his books was already released. And so I bought it without even checking it out. You know, I buy a lot of shit on Kindle. But anyway, so I bought it, and then I was looking for it. And it's like, oh, it's not even released yet. So anyway, but I am very, very happy about checking out his upcoming novel, Cine, C-I-N-E.
Yeah.
I guess it's cinema. I don't know. But either way, I'm not very...
it's Chine.
Yeah, sign.
This came out October 30th.
Oh, really?
So fairly recently.
Right in time for Halloween.
Yeah, I would be down for a sequel.
For a sequel? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it... The story doesn't need
it
one.
It doesn't, but it would go in a kind of interesting direction.
Yeah, I think in order for them to effectively do a sequel on this, and the ending does lead it up to a possible sequel. In fact, a very, very easy sequel. Yeah. But if they started tackling like social greed and shit like that, you know, mm-hmm. like social problems, it could easily, you know, it's totally made for that. But I don't know. I kind of get annoyed whenever people get preachy and do that.
Yeah.
And so it would be the difference of this being a very personal story to her versus her becoming basically a crime fighter. Yeah. And so anyway, I don't know.
It was good. It stands on its own very, very well, mm-hmm. but I wouldn't be opposed to reading more.
No, me neither. Speaking of which, I don't know if we mentioned last week, did we mention that Matt Hickman's book that Jeremy Evil has a name? Has one name? Son of a bitch.
Every time.
Evil's got a name and shit, yo. Did I mention last week that he's got a sequel coming out?
We talked about it. I don't know if it was on air.
Yeah, I don't think it was, but that really, like, I'm in the same camp with that. Like, it didn't need a sequel, but since one's coming out, I'm probably going to check it out.
Yeah.
So, anyway. But, well, that's pretty much all I have to say about this. You want to jump into Turbo Kid, or is there anything else you got?
No, I think I'm good.
All right. Well, I wonder how many weeks in a row this has been our, you know, English invasion.
Or British invasion.
Yeah. Anyway. Well, next week, the Brits will continue to invade BNE. So, anyway, we'll be back with our review of Turbo Kid.
That was the RX Bandits with Analog Boy off of their album Progress.
Nice.
Yeah. I love that band.
Yeah, you're a huge fan of them and the Sound of Animals. No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to just say it. Sound of Animals Fighting.
I just like saying go ahead while we're saying the same thing. Basically, anything to sidetrack, anything ever, I'm down for.
Yeah. No, but I really love that band. So,
yeah, well,
I'm always sad because I didn't get to see him live,
dude. If we could somehow hack time Kung Fury style, we could do that. That was one thing I loved about Kung Fury that I had forgotten how he got back in time was the hacker man.
Yeah. Where
he's like, I will just hack time. Anyway,
no, I love the like side-scrolling, like Streets of Rage style fight scene at the end when he's going through the whole thing of of Nazis.
Yeah, right? And in the background it's just Nazis like Street Fighter style.
Yeah, he just takes them one at a time.
Yeah, I was wondering, do you think that he knew like kung fu? Actor?
No, they got the dude who did a lot of the stuff, I believe, was a stand-in.
Oh, really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I was wondering, like, how hard it would be on such a limited budget to pull off all of the kung fu moves.
Like, I know that scene in particular where he's just, you know, running the gauntlet was a stand-in.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. He was like a professional martial artist.
Yeah, I really like wide shots on stuff like that. I don't really like close cuts and, like, you know, a fist flying and then, like, connecting on martial arts.
They say the quicker the cut in a martial arts movie, the worse the people were at fighting.
Yeah, exactly. And so, like, I don't know, Old Boy and stuff like that. You know the scene in Old Boy where he's got that hammer and... No?
No.
Okay.
I've never actually seen it.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah. Dude, you owe yourself an Old Boy treat. Just watch the original, not so much the remake. But I did like the remake, and I know that I'm in the huge, huge...
I heard it was toned down so much.
Minority, yeah. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people didn't like it, but it was just kind of messing with an awesome... you know, franchise that people didn't, even though it really wasn't a franchise, but whatever. But no, it's got this scene where he's just killing a shitload of people with a hammer, same style, and it's one shot for a long time, and it's freaking awesome. And so, like, he'll like jump down levels of floors because it's like an open atrium type flooring,
nice.
And then more people, and the camera just like pans and follows down. Mm-hmm. It's so
there's a Buster cool. Keaton movie like that I watched the other day.
Oh, really? Yeah. Yeah. But,
and also, the fight scene in The Kingsman is one take, too. Like, and it goes on for like 10 minutes.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Huh. Yeah. Did you ever see that Biting Elbows video? I forget the name of the song, but it's a. I'll show it to you later. It's amazing. It's all shot on a GoPro, and it's fighting, and it is so amazing. So amazing. Best local. Band, even though they're not local here, they're just not a big giant band. Best small band video ever. Small band, like.
Okay. So, speaking of movies that were not shot in one take, Turbo Kid. I don't know. That was the best segue I could get.
Yeah. Turbo Kid. Okay, so this. I guess I'll jump on the summary of this. It's a post-apocalyptic revisionist history.
Yeah, because it's like 1996.
Yeah, and so he's in the 90s, and it's a kid in this kind of Mad Max-style dystopian alternate future where water is key for everything, and everything sucks, honestly. Like, I would hate that. And it's not quite steampunk. But it's kind of a mix between that and 80s awesome stuff. You know?
Yeah.
And no, so
that's exactly what it is.
And so he's a lonely kid that just finds trash and trades it for water or digs through trash for heaps of treasure and digs through and trades it for water. And so really the future sucks or the fake future past.
Yeah.
It sucks. And so he
for him.
Yeah. And so he finds a friend, a very, very quirky girl named Apple. And whenever she's kidnapped, he goes to save her and inadvertently becomes Turbo Kid.
Yeah.
So anyway.
Well, I mean, like, I've heard this movie was described as Mad Max on BMX.
Yeah. Right,
but I kind of don't feel like that's what the movie was about.
No,
to me, it was about a kid like learning not to be alone.
Yeah, I think honestly, thematically, this fits with like it fits along the lines of like movies like The Goonies or something like that. I mean, not really. I don't know. It just had the same tone to me. Mm-hmm. Of course, it's very, very gory. Yeah. But the tone isn't mean really until it is very mean.
Well, see, to me it was like the movie was a comedy, right?
Uh-huh.
But they didn't know it was a comedy. Like the people in it, you know, like everything was played super duper straight.
Yeah.
Right? Like even to the point where, you know, whenever he that guy gets cut in half. And his torso gets stuck on the top of another guy, right? And it's like, it was hilarious, you know, and you could tell it was played for laughs. But in the movie, it was completely serious.
Yeah, and to the guy that the torso fell on, he couldn't just pull it off like a normal person would. Yeah,
exactly.
It was just like, oh no, this is how I am now.
Yeah, I have two torsos now.
Yeah. Okay, so overall, did you like it or not?
I did.
Did you? I did too.
It was not what I was expecting, though.
No, and me neither. And honestly, I liked it, but there's something about it that I found off-putting.
I can see that.
What it was, I mean, I liked it a lot more than I didn't like it, but I think that it kind of fits in this Kung Fury type, like, it's kind of convenient that I watched them both yesterday, but I do think that they fit kind of together in this, like, retro future type thing.
Yeah.
That it's just pandering to these festival, like, especially like Fantastic Fest audience, you know, it's pandering to that kind of hipster bullshit. Mm-hmm. That kind of annoys me, but it's not that I don't like it. You know what I'm saying?
It's funny that you say that, because like while I was watching this, I was like, you know, I'm kind of sick of these fake retro movies.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. I mean, it kind of worked. It worked best for me with like Grindhouse. Mm-hmm. And Kung Fury was great, and I really liked this movie. I just don't want to see us going on this path where you're seeing like this washed out VHS bullshit and super synthesizers, even though our theme song is synthesizer, but you know, like super synthesizer, super synthesized everything, you know, it's not, we got past that as a society, but well, I don't know.
It's a stylistic choice and I respect it, you know, but like, I feel like sometimes things are just jumping on the bandwagon.
Exactly.
Now this one though, has been around since before this, right? It was a submission for the ABCs of Death, uh-huh. Right? When was that? Like,
that was 2011, I think.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is technically,
like, as far as the submissions go, I think the film came out in 2012.
This is like technically ahead of the curve. It's just this version didn't come out till recently.
Yeah. And it's not that I didn't like it, 'cause I really did. I thought that, honestly, this was a fun movie. I just, it's opening Pandora's box to where this is the new, quote unquote, torture porn. You know, it's just some shit that's not needed that's going to take a very, very strong foothold in the pop culture. And so, I don't know, do I like it from that angle? No, I really don't think that this is needed. And I'm tired of this kitschy bullshit. But I thought it was fun. I don't know.
See, I think, to me, it kind of goes for your level of like how hard you hit that, you know, how hard do you go 90s style or 80s style with it? You know, like this one at the beginning, like the very first production company logo looked like an 80s production company logo. It was all staticky, tracking was off and stuff like that. But then nothing else was.
Yeah.
You know, whereas like Kung Fury had like missing scenes because the tape was worn out.
Yeah.
And everything like that. And I feel like if you're going to do it,
go do it. Go
like,
hard.
Go hard with it. Yeah, exactly. And so like, I don't know. Like, I guess it didn't bother me as much. Like, I am kind of just getting sick of it for, you know, sick of its sake. You know, like how they just keep happening. Like, this could have not said it was the 90s and it wouldn't have really felt like as throwbacky of a film. You know what I mean? Like, if they would have just been like, this is the future.
Yeah, if they played it more along the lines of something like Hobo with a Shotgun, which I didn't find off-putting, even though it kind of was the exact same thing.
Or just Mad Max, if you want to draw the obvious parallel. You know, it's like, that wasn't in any explicit time frame.
No.
You know, you could argue that the first one was, but like all the other ones, Thunderdome and Fury Road and everything like that was just in indeterminate future. Right. And I kind of feel like if they would have gone that route, it wouldn't have felt like as much of a throwback.
You know, this film actually got me thinking about how it does make a lot more sense for them to be riding bikes versus cars.
Yeah. Gas would have been so hard to get.
Gas is hard to get. And also, you know, gas goes bad. So do they have like a very skeleton crew? And are we supposed to think it logistically in the Mad Max series, they have a skeleton crew at like one refinery?
Yeah.
Is that what?
You remember Fury Road? They had Bullet Town, which made all the bullets. And then they had like Gasville or whatever it was called.
Yeah, Gas City, I think.
Yeah, Gas City.
Yeah.
That was a refinery.
Okay.
That's all it was. All right. Was one big refinery.
Okay, that makes more sense.
And then it was like international trade, basically, between the tribes.
I took it as Gas City just had the previous gas, like that's going bad currently.
No, it's like a refinery. Now, like the original Mad Max was set like basically right after the apocalypse.
Yeah.
You know, like Road Warrior.
And like, that makes sense whenever, you know, gas is scarce and it's a hot commodity and it will not be available in the future.
Yeah.
I like that much better. But no, Turbo Kid. Okay. Thematically, I like the choice of bikes.
Yeah.
I like,
but it also added this layer of ridiculousness,
yeah,
right? That no one else seemed to notice was ridiculous. You know, it was just, you're this badass on a BMX. You know what it's like?
Yeah. I like that. I like the fact that he had, you know, his Walkman and stuff, the little sport Walkman that it seemed like everyone had. I had one, I remember, and I took it in a bathtub with me, or in the shower with me jamming, and it just like went to shit. Like, I mean, but it was sport and waterproof.
Yeah, and it was supposed to be like water resistant or whatever.
But yeah, but no, I like that. What I don't like is that, you know, like I said, it's this kitschy stuff. And also 1997 isn't the 80s, you know?
It was a movie. If you think about it like that, it would have been made in the 80s. The future would have been the 90s.
Yeah, yeah. And plus, there is the flashback. I had forgotten when he's a child, the apocalypse had already happened. So that's at least 10 years ago. And so, yeah, you are stuck at 80s tech.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I mean, I like it. I really, really like it. It was on Netflix. You know, it's not like we were out money to watch it.
No.
If I had paid $15 a ticket to see it, I might have been a little more annoyed.
I don't know. I mean, probably, but I think it's just, you know, oversaturation is getting to us. Like, if none of these happen again, and then like 5 years later, somebody does another retro movie, I don't think it's going to bother us. I think it's the fact that's like seems to be the new thing.
Yeah, even with video games, like everything's going like 8-bit and stuff like that. And even just a few years ago, I remember seeing like, oh, cool, 8-bit games. That's awesome. And then now it's like, shit,
everything's 8-bit.
Why is it 8-bit? We have little, you know, amazing computers in our pockets now that are capable.
But they can run Super Nintendo emulation so well.
yeah. Well, Super Nintendo, let's jump it up to 16-bit.
That's 16-bit.
But
I mean, next will be the 90s ones.
Sega CD.
God.
That was like 32-bit, I believe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then remember the Atari Jaguar?
Yeah.
Right? That one was terrible.
Did you have a Lynx?
I did have a Lynx. We both had Lynxes.
Yeah.
Remember we bought them because they were like on sale or something. And we bought them and we got a Lynx cable and we had that really crappy racing game.
Oh yeah. So we like used it once. Like the cable. Yeah. Huh. I don't remember playing it a lot though. Do you?
I did, but it was just because I would be bored or whatever.
But yeah, back to the film. So maybe, I don't know, maybe I'm just being a little too harsh on it.
I think you're jaded.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. Because the film, you know, I would say that this is at least a 3.5, possibly a 4.
Yeah.
There's nothing that's going to make it I think without the oversaturation of this type of thing, this could have been a cult classic, but it also didn't really hit all of the right notes to be a cult classic. The end kind of, it felt again like an ongoing saga, and I think that it's best to not, to just wrap this up.
Well, I think that's also probably, you know, another little reference to Mad Max.
Yeah.
Because, like, he would just travel.
Yeah.
And so the end of the movie would just be him leaving.
Yeah.
You know, I think, like, yeah, without the oversaturation of the market of this thing, I think we would have liked it a lot more. Mm-hmm. Right. Because we're both probably just getting jaded. But like I said, you have to put in the account that this was like before all that really happened. Really, if you think about it, just because of the original short. But I'm not trying to like make excuses for it or anything like that. But I think what got me though was that it wasn't what I was expecting. You know, I was expecting campy, like super violent, and it was that, right? But then at its core, it was a love story.
Yeah, and also the violence, for some reason, it was off-putting to me.
Really?
Yeah, I mean, I liked it, but it was just so cheesy that I was like, I mean, nothing's at stake when violence is that cheesy, you know? Mm-hmm. It doesn't feel like, whereas, again, Hobo with a Shotgun, to me, got it right because the violence was...
It was like one of the grittiest movies I've ever seen.
Yeah, but it was still cheesy. Like it was spraying obviously fake blood through real cheesy prosthetic devices. But it felt like the violence was real and the threat was imminent. There was never a point in the film where I felt like all three of the main characters, well, two of them, were going to die.
Yeah.
Now, the third one died a million times. In fact, to the point where when she... I revealed who it was. I'm off my A game this week. But whenever it happens to that character at the end, I laughed.
Like, yeah.
The one that was supposed to really get you, I was like, ha, like, what? How are they going to bring this one back again? You know? Yeah. But anyway, I don't know. Yeah, I would say 3.5. Maybe I'll like it more because the same thing happened with me upon my initial viewing of Kung Fury, where I was like, oh, yeah, it was cool. I don't think that it's as great as a lot of people are saying. And then yesterday I went back because I was telling my dad about it. And, you know, it's only 30 minutes while I was over there. And so I was like, dude, let's pop it on. We got time. And so, dude, my dad freaking loved it. He was like, this might be the best thing. He goes, oh, my gosh, this is awesome. Why is it 30 minutes? And so we got into that discussion. But I felt like, yeah, it's burnout. So maybe going back, knowing what it is, I might warm up to it a little more. Because I definitely did with Kung Fury. I liked it the first time, but I really liked it the second time.
See, I mean, I think everything about it was well done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, even, you know, the acting was good.
Mm-hmm.
All the production quality was really good. You had Michael Ironside in it.
yeah, which is always a selling point.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think the quality was there, you know? Like I said, I think the downfall is just oversaturation of this retro market. And that's not necessarily its fault. It's just a timing issue, you know?
Yeah. 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 I don't know. By the time something, it seems like when things are on the underground and it's very clear that they're going to take a foothold, that there's some sort of buzz about it. Like, oh, this is the next cool thing. But by the time everyone latches onto it, it's just like, you know, by the time it basically does become the intended trend, I've always been like, son of a bitch, you know? Like, and it doesn't matter if it's this or if it's slap bracelets. I was over all of it. Well, I'm saying, like, I remember being like one of the first people ever whenever I was like 12 years old that I knew of with a slap bracelet. My mom got it at a craft show and I was like, hell yeah, slap bracelet. But by the time everyone had slap bracelets, I was like, oh my God, this stuff again. Like, so it might just be me yeah. being a problem. But
probably.
But I don't know. I liked it. 3.5.
I was going to go 3.5.
Yeah. And I think for most people, you know, if this is your thing, you're going to like it more than 3.5. It'll probably be a 4 or hell, maybe even a 5. It might be a cult classic to you. But but I think just out of the oversaturation, I don't want to give it higher.
So. Yeah. I mean, if you're into the that, like retro stuff, this is going to be great.
Yeah. Yeah. If you're like a cartridge gaming collector, or a VHS collector, this is right up your alley. So yeah. Anyway, but yeah, I guess with that, do you want to close this one out?
Like with more stuff about Turbo Kid?
No.
Just in general.
Close the episode out.
Yeah. Okay. So go talk to us on Twitter and stuff.
Yeah, leave us a review
Facebook.
On iTunes.
Yeah. You know, or comment. On Facebook or website, go check out Longbox Small Talk and patiently await the return of Toxic City this week.
Yeah, it's a good time. If you've never listened to Toxic City, go back and subscribe. All their old episodes are available, and it's really, really cool. He talks with generally a creative every week, creative in some type of capacity.
It's not necessarily about comic books, even though it's the Toxic City like comics podcast. But it's just it's just interviews with musicians or artists or
fans.
Sometimes interesting people.
Yeah,
you know,
it's definitely the WTF of the B&E network.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it. I like all those acronyms together. But it's definitely worth a shot. You know, Chevy does a great job doing the interviews and things.
Yeah, he might be the best host on our network.
Yeah, he's like the Mark Maron of B&E.
Just going with that analogy. Dude, Toxic City is the garage of this network.
Oh, man.
But anyway, so check that out. One thing we don't hype as much as we should, join our Facebook group, B-Movies and Ebooks. It's not
like
as
the actual group. Or
yeah, like page. Our page. Yeah. Don't join the group. There's nothing going on in there. I created that by accident and can't figure out how to delete it.
And you were the only ones in it.
But like our page. I hope that we start pushing a little more content on it, because honestly, it's the only way to know right now when the episodes drop, not at least in Facebook. It's the only way, but hopefully we are going to be kind of stepping up our game on that. So anyway, yeah.
I actually had something to talk to you about that.
Okay. Taking it down.
No. Yeah. I was just going to cancel it
and delete Facebook. It's clear that website's not going anywhere.
Facebook entirely.
Yeah. All right. Well, I guess I'm done.
Yeah. We'll see you guys next week.
The podcast you just heard is part of the B&E Network, brought to you by bmoviesandebooks.com.